Good afternoon, everyone. We've got Mark Bennett here. Delighted to be joining us on the call today. And for our listeners, Mark is someone who has a wealth of experience of working in sport for over 30 years now across sort of a variety of different sports. Got a fantastic background. I suppose, welcome, Mark. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more on yourself?
Well, hello, Stuart, first of all. Yeah, the short version is this will be my 31st year in developing a need-centered approach to coaching, in developing the right culture and the right behaviours through the coach to impact on athletes. But it's been, 30 sports. Didn't even know there was 30 sports globally, all the way up to international and elite pro sports, down to primary schools and grassroots, whether it's individual sports or team sports. So yeah, it's been a long journey. Obviously, I used to be in the military, used to run the commando training wing, and used to be a senior instructor in the Army Physical Training Corps. So there's lots of elements that I recognise weren't very good and I wanted to change it. And I'm lucky enough, because I've worked with so many different coaches around the world in so many sports, you start to spot the trends. So because you spot the trends, fundamentally, that's when you always start with coach support, is identifying those fundamentals that are so common, irrelevant of your sport and age group.
Fantastic. And I suppose before we begin, really, Mark, I mean, what's made you go from going into the military into the work that you're doing now across different sports? How have you got to the role that you're doing now?
It was just a natural evolution. I joined in 1983 in the military, and my expectation was everyone would be highly motivated and fit, and the truth was they weren't. Most were unfit, demotivated. So eventually I met a commando-trained soldier, and all of a sudden I saw those qualities that I thought everyone in the military would be, and he really inspired me. Budgie Burgess was his name, still remember him today. So I went down to the commando course, and again, then I saw the people motivated, but what I started to identify later on in the 1990 time was we weren't very good at developing the people that didn't have that mental robustness side of things. When I say mental robustness, my meaning to that is the people that when things aren't going right can still commit and make the decisions. People that are open to learning and changing, but have the robustness to do things they're uncomfortable with, even when they can't do it yet. Those kind of elements we weren't very good at. So I started to really challenge the principles and see if I could do better as an instructor. But then in 98, 99, I started to go on sports coaching days, and I met coaches, and they were all saying, and at the time I was running the commando training wing, and I was saying, oh, we're really struggling to get our team working together. And I was in my late 20s then, says, oh yeah, no problem, I can do that. So I started to work pre-seasons with teams like Warrington Wolves Super League team, Sale Sharks, Rugby Union, Saracens. And within a short period of time, the players were really having a big impact in how they were thinking and acting. But then it came when they were going back to their working environment. Within 2-3 weeks, I had these same players calling me back saying, Mark, we've regressed, we've gone back. They didn't use the regress word. They used something a bit more challenging. But then I started to realize, actually, it's no good me going into an organization and me influencing the change if it's not sustainable. So the reality, the light bulb came, and this was 2000, 2001, is that unless I can develop the influencers, which generally are the coaches and the senior players or the influential players and the managers, actually nothing sustainable. So I'm ticking boxes. It's like a training course. How many people have been on a training course and go, this is fantastic, or a motivational speaking talk, oh, this is amazing. And then within 3 weeks, sometimes less, you're doing exactly what you did before. There's no change. Mm-hmm. So that's when I really worked hard at actually how can I develop adherence, the ability to positive influence people's behavior unsupervised when you're not with them over time to embed the support change. So that's where my journey has developed to what it is today, which I think is one of the world leading interventions that impacts long-term behavior in people, not just when you're supervised.
Fantastic. And you mentioned earlier about some of the trends that you've come across in different sports now. So I suppose, what are some of the trends that you've seen that have linked from one sport to the next? And I suppose thinking about our listeners in terms of those grassroots coaches, have you seen some comparisons from one sport, maybe whether it be rugby into football?
Oh, yeah, so many common traits across all sports with coaches. Now, there's many, but because we've got a short period of time, I'm just going to nail a couple of the big daddies. Mm. The first one is lack of self-awareness at your own behaviors, your own state, your own behaviors. You're so focused on enthusiastic and passionately want to help the players as much as you can. Sometimes your awareness of what you're saying, how you're saying, and what you're seeing isn't as effective as it could be. So therefore, your interventions aren't as effective. So that's one. The second one is you don't know what you don't know. So a lot of coaches were ex-players, then going into coaching because their legs or knees can't. Some have really been passionate about coaching early on. But you go on coaching courses, and most of them are technical, tactical courses. You may have a few slides on it's about coaching behavior, etc. But the reality is a lot of coaches don't know enough tools to know how to engage every young player. So you'll have the same ones always talking. You'll have the same ones always disengaged at the back. How can I engage everyone? And it's that light and shade of knowing, one, I'm self-aware of what I'm doing and I can see it all. But also then I have a toolkit to know what interventions to stimulate engagement, enthusiasm, take away the fear, all these elements. And there for me, although there's so many more, they're the fundamental two that I think any coach at any age group, if you can stimulate and focus on improving those two, the impact will be transformational with the players you work with.
Fantastic. And I suppose for any coach that, whether they're just beginning their journey as a coach at any level really, or they've now experienced, I think sometimes having those real clear objectives of what you're trying to achieve as a coach is fundamental to how you work. So I suppose, what do you do anything with coaches on giving, you know, you sort of mentioned about self-awareness and that side of it. What sort of tools or strategies or advice would you give to coaches, you know, in terms of developing those objectives?
I always say to any coach that either asks my advice or goes on one of my online mentoring journeys with me or live support, is I never start pursuing an intervention with them, sharing any ideas, until I say, look, just film yourself coaching. Just do it enough so everyone forgets it there. And the beauty of it is with technology now, it's so cheap. You know, you can set anything up. I mean, I always recommend people to get the cameras as a chest strap. I think they're £20-30 now, some of them, which is everything we need. And what that does is it picks up, which a camera from the side wouldn't, it picks up what you're seeing at the time and hearing, because it's giving you your visual. So all I say to people is, look, just put it on, just coach how you coach now. Don't try and be different. And then just give yourself some reflection time. So what I ask people to do is, before you turn the recording off, at the end of that, just review you. So the recording's still going, and just saying, right, I thought I was really good. I think I achieved my success, or I thought I was really cool, or really interacted really well, or I struggled a bit here, or I wasn't sure I'd interact with these people, whatever it may have been, just your self-evaluation. Based on you first, not on others. And then all I ask people to do is just find some time on your own and just watch it back and listen. But importantly, don't look at the technical and tactical. Look at how you are, what you're saying, how you're saying it, and look at the interaction with the people in front of you. One is, are they engaged? And secondly, what impact is what you're saying having? And actually, are you impacting them so they can make decisions for themselves, or are you impacting on them so they won't do anything unless you tell them what to do or tell them what was right and wrong? So it's just an awareness. And the reality is, anyone can do that. That's the beauty of it. It doesn't really cost much apart from getting the camera, which is cheap now. But what you'll find is, after you've got to the point where you say, oh my God, I hate the sound of my voice, you'll start to pick up, wow, I didn't see this, I didn't see that. So this is why I call it a cold review, because it's in reflection afterwards. The hot review is that you saying that review straight after the session, which is live in your emotional state. And it's really important to do those two. But just by watching yourself back, you'll pick up traits that you didn't even realize you had. So it may be a common one, may be, my God, I'm never silent. I'm shouting at them, telling them what to do next. Or I'm shouting generally, that was really good. Who was it good for? I've just shouted it to everybody. And actually, if my goal is to get them engaged and enjoyment at grassroots, which should be where we need to be, or if it's actually, I want them when they play to enjoy playing better. So that may be, well, I want them to make choices without fear. That may be something. I've got to ask myself, when I'm coaching them in practice, am I developing the behaviors there to allow them to do that? Or am I, because of my love and passion to help them, am I helping them too much so no longer they're making any decisions? So it's kind that awareness is huge. And I would recommend any coach listening to this, before you watch any videos, before you look at YouTube, before you listen to somebody aspire to and go, oh, yeah, I should do this, don't put in any intervention until you first establish what you're doing now. Because if you don't know what you're doing now, how can you choose your most important intervention for change, if indeed you need to change?
That's fantastic. I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because quite often when you're reviewing a session as a coach, you can sometimes look at, oh, the players didn't receive on their back foot, or they struggled with the more technical tactical side. But actually, having a look at it from just solely how you interacted and engaged with the players as the first point, I suppose that's going to help you moving forwards when you're looking at trying to create a real, you know, a brilliant learning environment for them to develop. And that building of self-awareness is essential for you too. And I'm intrigued, Mark, you know, when you have coaches working across different age groups, do you see any slight differences to how perhaps some of the traits that, you know, a coach working with 7 or 8 year olds may need compared to someone that's working with older players? You know, do you see any things that coaches need to focus on across those different age groups?
I see bad traits. What should happen is you should be coaching what's in front of you, linked to what I call a lighthouse. So the lighthouse is you, first of all, understand where am I taking them to? What's the destination look like? What's the vision? You know, if I'm dreaming it, what would I see within these players? What would it look like? What would it sound like? So I have a real picture of what that looks like, not just some words and a list. And then importantly, we need to share that with everyone involved, parents, players, everyone. Look, this is the vision. So now when they go, okay, well, that's, we agree, that would be great if we can get there. Then we ask ourselves, okay, so if we want to get there, what does practice or training, whatever you want to call it, look like in order for us to get there? So what do we need to do? What do I need to do differently as a coach? And importantly, what do you guys need to do differently in players? Now, I've done this with 5-year-old kids and they've started to come up with good answers, because it's not a right or wrong answer. It's just stimulating, referencing back to this lighthouse. Where the problems I see so often in the age groups, it seems to be, and now there's some of this going on at all ages, is we get so involved in the technical or tactical or winning games, we forget what our role is, back to the lighthouse. We're taking them, we're part of a small segment of their life, of a long journey. Now, we'd like to think that our segment, our influence in that short period of time, maybe 6 months, maybe one season, maybe 2 seasons, will stimulate them. So one, they want to stay in this sport or any sport, but actually they're a better person because of it. They're taking learning to be better, to be more courageous, to have more confidence, to be able to manage their own state, self-evaluate themselves, make choices. And by doing that, committing to the present moment to help them be the best they can be in their technical and tactical. So if I'm focused on that, what the problem I find is people get so caught up in the technical and tactical, they lose sight of what I call the facilitators of that. One, because they haven't agreed the lighthouse. So they may have it in their head, but they haven't shared it. And then secondly, they're so focused on covering their lesson plan. Today we're doing defense, or I want them to be better on their left foot passing, long pass, whatever it may be. We're forgetting, actually, if we want to develop great kids to stay in the game and enjoy the game, let's develop them to be able to make decisions for themselves, commit with them without fear, and grow that way. So what we've got to look at is what are the very facilitators of behaviors that any age has when they enjoy, when they're engaged, and they don't change. I've worked with pro elite international teams and even primary school kids in inner cities in America and England. And actually those very behaviors don't change. The only thing that changes is the pressure of the game as you move up in expectation of competition. Obviously NBA teams, there's a lot of pressure, et cetera, premiership football, and grassroots shouldn't have any of that. And they shouldn't be focused on winning or losing as a success criteria going into a game. So what we've got to fundamentally say is, what is my part of that player's journey? Importantly, think of the player as a person. How transformational am I keeping them in the game, but am I helping them grow as a person? Now, when we start looking at that, our success criteria is very different than some coaches go, well, I'm measured by the parents on, can they kick the ball further? Or can we win against this other club that we have this should be non-competitive game, but all of a sudden it's about winning and losing. So what we've got to do is make sure we're clear on our lighthouse, we're clear on our success criteria, and we honor it and understand we don't own any player. We're a service provider to them, and we're a small chunk, a small part of their journey of development in life. And we need to put that as a forefront. That has to be our priority. And we need to share that with parents, everyone of influence. Because the other challenge we have, Ross, is if we don't share and win the hearts and minds of the parents may have an expectation of a good coaching session is the coach becoming passionate and shouting all the time. So if you then change your behaviors, you go, actually, I'm going to get the kids to support and help each other be the best they can be, to self-evaluate. I'm going to put some scenarios in and give them the confidence to make choices and commit to them. And I will be sharing some technical and tactical, but my thing is I want them to engage and help each other be the best they can be. So if you start doing that and you have connected to the parents, actually, this is great coaching because this is what I'm going to give to your kids. They'll be looking at you thinking, who is this coach? Get rid of him. He's not passionate. You know, what's he doing? He's not saying anything. And then you get the challenge. So it's really important is to understand what is your purpose in this individual's journey and understand it's a small part, but also understand, unless I win the hearts and minds of all the influencers, including the parents and the managers and the other coaches and the kids, then actually it's not going to happen anyway, because the peer pressure, the parent pressure will be, no, good coaching is shouting and tech-tack and winning games of our six-year-old non-league competition.
Fantastic. I think, Mark, you mentioned the role of the coach or the organisation in terms of working to influence the influencers. That sort of, you've mentioned that now a number of times. Can you sort of delve in a little bit deeper in terms of who those influencers are and just give us some examples of how coaches or organisations may help influence those people?
Yeah, so I'd say it's the most important element that we miss out on so much. You see a lot of pre-seasons, and I connect this to all levels of sport, but you'd see pre-seasons where they have a list, you know, our club is about passion and teamwork and excellence. And they put all these words on a wall. They never live by them. And actually the meaning of what they look like is never brought alive or understood. So what we've got to do is understand, look, people of influence will kill the growth or they'll build the growth. So we need to understand and scan for who are all those people. Now, they could be parents. They could be the boss of the club. They could be other coaches that could, if you don't win them over, conflict with what you're doing. They could be certain players of influence. So I use, when I'm, I check behavior. So performance is a behavior, not an outcome, is a philosophy runs through my whole process of the system. And what I always look for, even in the players, is who are the player of influence? Who are the assassins and who are the ninjas, as I call them? So what you have is you have ninjas, assassins, and sheep. Now, this is a really good thing for any coach to do, is go through your team and just observe and write down who is an assassin, who is a ninja, and who is a sheep. Now, if I explain what they are, it's based on behaviors. So a sheep is someone that can be influenced by anybody. So if someone's having a bad day, the sheep will have a bad day. If someone gets angry at them, they will get angry. If someone's saying, oh, why should we be doing this? They'll be going, yeah, why should we be doing this? So they're the people that could go either way. The assassins are your disruptors. So your assassins are the people either covertly disrupt in the background, mucking around, you know, why are we doing this, bang, 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 or they'll just start challenging. Now, generally, young kids, they won't challenge coach, but they will be disengaged and disruptive. Then you have the ninjas. So the ninjas are your big loudspeakers. They can often be highly motivated, really want to play well, but often until we've done what I call ninja mastery, they could get frustrated with other players if the players aren't working as hard as them. So their intent is good, but their ability to influence others could be quite bad because actually they could get frustrated. So what we do is I ask a team, and it's great for grassroots, is just make a list of your players and see where they are. So here's the important thing. Many assassins can become great ninjas, and many ninjas can turn into assassins unless we engage them. So if we're looking at influencers, the assassins and the ninjas are influencers. So what we've got to say to ourselves is, what are we doing to get them on side to support us? What skill training are we doing? So a great example may be you've got a six-year-old kid that when they turn up, they're the ones always highly motivated, but shout at other kids when they don't come off on execution or they don't sprint as hard. But actually, their intent is good, but actually how they're coming across is very negative and aggressive and knocking other players. So we take them to the side, and a great, there's many of them, light and shade, but this is just one example. So imagine it's Stevie. We say, Stevie, love what you're saying. When we come into the group, you're always the one giving the answers. I love that. I've noticed, like, Danny and Johnny, they're quite silent, and actually I can see they're not as good at you in ability yet. So can you help me? When we come into the groups, instead of you giving the answers, can you stand next to them and ask them what they think and support them? But also understand that they're not as skillful as you, but can you help them when they commit to something, so long as they're committing to it, can you give them some positive reinforcement? What could you say to Danny if he really commits, even if it doesn't come off that he's committing? What could you do? I could say, well, great commitment. Great. Could you do that for me? Brilliant. So that becomes, now that's called ninja mastery. And slowly but surely you connect with them. So through the session, I forget, you bring him to the side. How are you doing? How's Danny doing? What could you say here? What are you seeing there? Yeah, Danny's a bit slow. He's just missed the ball. His head's down. He's juggling. What could you do there for me? I could speak. Great. Show me. Bang. Quick 10 seconds on the sideline and off we go. And all of a sudden, over a season, we're developing the software skills of the influencers. An assassin, disengaged. We've spotted they're disengaged. So what we can do with them is when we pull them off to the side and say, okay, what are you seeing with them over there? And they might go, oh, opposition. Yeah, they're pretty lazy. Where are they lazy? Oh, well, they're all coming into the middle. You know, there's loads of space there and we're not. Okay, great. If I give you 30 seconds with the team, could you come up with a strategy to exploit, to bring that opposition into the middle? And could you make it use that gap that's on the right? What could you do there? We could do a long pass. We can, okay, could you do that for me? And all of a sudden this person that's normally disengaged is going, oh yeah, I could do that. Okay, how long do you need? 20 seconds, speak to the team. Okay, everyone over to Jimmy, bang. And we do the same with the other team. And then we put, and all of a sudden now that person is now engaged that was disengaged because you're giving them responsibility. We're giving them a voice, but we're not just telling them, we're getting them involved in a conversation that's relevant, that's something they can do, that's something all of a sudden they've got focus. So that, there's many, but that's just a couple of examples of the influencers of players that sometimes we don't think about. Often people talk about parents of influencers, but it's actually looking at who is everyone as influencers.
Yeah, and I think, the sheep, the ninja and the assassin, I'm sure every coach that listens into it is immediately already thinking about how, well, this player is a sheep, this player is an assassin. And I think that's quite a really great way of sort of categorising those players. And I think one of the things that I've just sort of really thought about when speaking is, you know, how those certain types of players, they love that responsibility and they love to lead and they love to share their thoughts and their ideas. And that's one of the challenges I think sometimes you see in, particularly in grassroots, but across all sports in different environments, is that coach led and the coach leading and driving everything. So what are your thoughts on that in terms of player led, coach led? Is there a balance or do you have a preference? You know, what have you had from your experience, Mark?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding on player led, athlete led, athlete centered, coach led. And I think one of the struggles we have now, a lot of the, I'm generalizing here, but a lot of the specialists, as we call them on social media, they may be specialists in presenting, i.e., you know, a certain philosophy of, you know, what is athlete centered or effective questions or, you know, whatever it may be, game based. But what they don't have is the language to connect with the grassroots, the everyday coach. And they don't have a lot of coaching experience, some of them. So actually to bring it alive, they really struggle. The other challenge we have is one of the guys I've been mentoring, a GB Great Britain basketball coach, been mentoring for 10 plus years. We were getting frustrated because people were saying, oh, I'm athlete centered. And we were watching them, and in our interpretation, going, you're definitely not athlete-centered. The players are stood around listening to you asking a bunch of questions. That's not athlete-centered. That's boring. We're not playing anymore. We're just stood around listening to coach, which is equally as bad as a coach just shouting and giving them all the answers. So Alan, when we were chatting, Alan said, well, why don't we call it need-centered? Because everything you do, that's what it is. And we go, great. So now we're separating people's misinterpretation of athlete-centered and player-led with need-centered. So this is where I come from. Coaching is a light and shade. So coaching is a craft. It's ability to be aware of your state, being able to scan. And when I say scan, is looking and hearing and sensing all the data around you in that moment. Yourself, your coaches, the players. And then knowing the judgment, good judgment, based on, in this moment, can I manipulate the game to facilitate a pressure or a loading? Do I need to bring just one player out and just do a little hot review on the sideline for 30 seconds? Okay, what are you seeing? What can you do there back in? Is there actually, I'm giving them time to sort it out. I might give them a timeout, 30 seconds, players in your groups. They still can't work it out. My judgment is now, they're not getting it. I'm going to bring them in. I'm going to explain it to them. We're going to walk through it for 2 minutes and then put them back out. So it's understanding, and I think this is where a lot of traditional coaches that, let's label them coach-led, get put off by what good athlete centered, knee centered is it's not about stopping play and asking a bunch of questions. That's nonsense. Our aim should be, we don't have to ask any questions. Think of it like this. It might, bear with me, Ross, because this might sound a bit crazy. But if I'm, think of it like this. My whole aim is back to my lighthouse. So for me, my lighthouse is to make myself redundant as a coach, to develop players with the confidence and competence to be able to manage their state, scan well based on what's in front of them, make a great choice based on what they see, commit with intent 100%, review the choice and the execution live without the need for coach, and be able to interact effectively with their teammates. So adapt based on what they see, without fear, with confidence. That's my lighthouse as a coach. So if that's what it's there, is I need to be getting them to do stuff live in play. So I don't want to be pulling them off and stood asking me a bunch of questions. And the problem is with questions, if I'm having to pull a player off and ask three or four questions, that's telling me I've not developed the player's ability to self-review. So what I mean by self-reviewing is the ability of the player to go, right, I'm seeing, I'm making a choice based on what they're seeing, and coach will never knock me for that as long as I commit to it. So I'm committing. So I develop every player's, and I've done this with five-year-old kids all the way up, I share with my action review process with them. So what they know is then when I call them or shout their name, I'm interested in part of the action review process. So they might, so somebody might be, I've just spotted somebody and they've just passed a short ball, but actually there was a long ball option with which they have the ability to do, and they just didn't do that. So instead of me shouting long ball or what did you see there, blah, 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 I can just, as they're running back, I can just say, Stevie. Now, Stevie knows I'm just interested in what happened. So Stevie then goes, oh, it's a long ball. They're still running. I have not taken off. Thumb up. Great. So now I know you've recognized it. That's it. That's all I need. Now I'm scanning for next opportunity. Does the behavior shift? Now, the other thing is, if they've done something exceptionally well, but the outcome hasn't been great and you see their head going down, I do the same. Jimmy. And all of a sudden, Jimmy's connected back to, actually, it's about making a choice and committing to it. And actually, I made a great choice. I committed to 100%. It didn't come off, but it was the right choice. So then you're going to go, oh, no, good choice. Wouldn't change it, coach. Go, I agree. Awesome. So that's the player first, player last. We're getting them first. And then if I need to ask any specific questions, I can to the detail. But I shouldn't be asking four or five questions, because the reality is all that's going to happen is players develop learned answers. So by the questions, the player's going, what does coach want me to say? Well, based on this question, this question, this question, he wants me to say this. So the player says it and the coach goes, great. Yeah, brilliant. Well, hang on. No, it's only brilliant if actually it shifted someone's behavior live. Are they self-aware of it live? So this is, for me, coaching is a craft of light and shade. There are times when you need to sell. There's times when you need to challenge. There's times when you need to let it go and manipulate the situation. There's times when you can do little one-to-one reviews. There's times when it's a reset. And this is what I call need-centered. We identify what's the need in the moment for that player or team based on their long-term development, not just based on a quick fix. Does that make sense in a short explanation?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that quick fix, I often sort of look at it as like a PlayStation coach, you know, someone that almost tells and dictates what the players do. And, you know, if something doesn't happen as quickly, let's try and resolve it there and then. And I think there's obviously some trade-offs there. You know, may see a short-term increase in performance if the outcome is to win, but that not necessarily doesn't always lead to good long-term development and the players being able to make their own decisions and solve their own problems. Mark, and I suppose, you know, if you're a coach and you're sort of really bought into this way of working, you think, right, I'm going to give this a go, I'm really going to take this on board. How do you get your club, or how would you get your other coaches and peers involved in that? You know, because you might have coaches that have contrasting use? You know, what sorts of tools could you give to coaches that maybe want to look at this from a whole club perspective?
Let's go with the free route, because that's always the best, Ross. So actually getting onto my website now and just listening to a lot of the podcasts and some of the video footage, but just pick one or two podcasts and just go, let's just have a listen to this, see what we think. And because it's then not threatening or challenging, it's not saying you're a bad coach or anything, which reality is no one's a bad coach. Everyone's coaching in a way they passionately believe is the best. Back to you don't know what you don't know, or lack of self-awareness. So you stimulate that conversation. Then you just say, well, let's just find out. Let's just all record each other and then just watch ourselves back and then catch up for a discussion about it. So what I always ask is, and this is a great way if you've got a team of coaches, even if you've got one or two together, all you say is, look, let's just record each. I record myself, you record you, and we can rotate round if we've only got one camera. Let's watch it back individually. Let's take some time notes, and then let's just share it with each other. So then I can watch you, you can watch me and look at my notes, add any notes, and we can have a discussion. And by that, what you're going to do, so long as they're focused on their awareness of their interaction, how effective it is, not the tech-tack, what you're going to do is you're going to stimulate coaching craft conversation. And from that, all you say is, okay, so we've now identified there's things we can do better. Let's agree an individual work on for each other. Right, I'm going to make sure that actually I don't say anytime they say anything, I need to add something afterwards. So I'm going to really work at that. So that may be something for that coach. Another coach may go, I've really got to make sure that I'm scanning everyone. I don't ask the same questions of the same players because I know they're going to give me the answer. I'm going to find a way to engage more players. So that could be my work on. So all of a sudden then you're stimulating a review process that's going to help them think about their behaviors as a coach. And then there's a bunch of videos and YouTube links through the website, which is all free, that just helps share some of the tools, some of the podcasts go into how you can set the lighthouse, et cetera, that is just going to help stimulate you to understand you cannot change players unless you change yourself first. Change begins at self. You can't change yourself until you understand your accuracy of your self-awareness. Am I who I think I am? Then you can't change unless you've established what is your lighthouse. Because unless you need to understand what is my role and what do I want the players to look like, where am I growing them to, what does that look like, then you don't know what you need to do to change. So those fundamentals will stimulate a self-awareness, which will definitely stimulate an awareness of behavior shift. Whether you choose to or not is different. But what you're going to do now is you're going to go, I now realize, actually, I'm answering all the questions for the players, or I'm never letting them figure it out because I'm always giving them the answer. So actually, that's going against how I want to develop a player. That's going against my lighthouse. Now, you can choose to be aware, now I know I'm not very effective. Or you can choose to, now I know I'm not effective, based on my goal, I'm going to change. Change is tough, but at least you've got the stimulation of awareness. That's the key.
Fantastic. And I suppose in terms of measuring that impact or measuring your effectiveness as a coach, have you got anything or any signs, you know, that coaches should look for if they do make a change in the way they're working, where they're actually like, that's it, we're on the money now, we're starting to make good progress. Is there any common themes that stand out?
Yeah, there's two, well, there's many, but two starters is start doing what I call covert recalls. So a covert recall is very simple. It does so much for the players and for you. All you do, it instead of starting a practice session with a chat, a warm-up, then a chat or a drill, whatever you do, you start after a warm-up live play. And what the live play is you checking how effective the learning was from the last session or two sessions ago or three sessions ago. What you don't do is go, remember what we did last week or yesterday, guys. You say nothing. Poker face. All they know is now what's going to happen is straight after warm-up, we're going to play football. So what happens to the warm-up? The intensity of the warm-up changes. Their mindset to be ready. So now we're developing very good behaviors for long-term development. But what's going to happen then? You just step back. You know now what you're scanning for because you've already got the data on what you worked with either last session or session before. And now you're watching, okay, is it still there? Now, if it's not there by anybody, what does that tell you about the effectiveness of the last session, Ross? If no one is recalling and applying it.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think if they're not doing that, then you probably need to change your strategy or change your tack. Yeah. You know, you're not being effective in the way you're working. So,
but what it's telling you is that session was ineffective. Mm. So that's your data now of how good a coach I can be. So my argument is, you never know how good a coach you are in the session. You will only know in a following session by doing your covert recall. Now, you can do covert recalls anytime during a session, but doing that at the beginning, one, it gets you focused on, well, I now have to scan because I need to see how are we. So remember, we haven't asked any questions. We haven't stimulated them. It's just live play, let's go. And you've told them, all I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be seeing how good we've remembered stuff. Now, you're only going to do one or two of them, and all of a sudden the engagement back at you is stimulated because you go, hang on, I don't understand this, coach. And I know next session we're going to be having to apply it. So now the players are starting to make the connection again. Now, that's one element. The second element is about you having your list of assassins, ninjas, and sheep. And you making sure, right, my aim is now to make sure within a week, if you're seeing them twice a week, three times a week, whatever it is, I'm just using that as an example, I'm going to have an interaction over that week with every single player. And the interaction may not be anything about football. I'm going to find out that Sarah loves motocross bikes. I'm going to work out that Jimmy is a Manchester City fan. So my conversation is going to be on those little things just to start some interaction, which then when we go into the practice, they're not as fearful of me. They go, oh, coach is all right. We can have conversations with the coach. And then we can start transferring that in game. So then it may be, right, once we start moving and we have groups, I'm going to make sure that actually there's different people talking in those player groups. But I'm definitely not going to be in there, but I'm just going to start targeting in a positive, supportive way to help engage more people. So there's two simple ways that's going to help focus you as a coach to help you understand, well, I've got a marker of how successful I was, but also I've got a focus area for me to help engage players that normally would be the silent shadows in my session.
Yeah, I think that power of connection is so, so valuable. And you said it, different children and different personality types will need different ways of getting them on board and buying into you and, you know, helping build that, I suppose, that easiness of conversation, make them feel comfortable around you as a coach. One of the things I was really intrigued by, you know, just throughout this call, there's not been really ever a mention of syllabus or how we coach things, or and sometimes you find as coaches, you know, you may look at the beginning of the season and our objective is to work on these different topics and we're going to work on this topic for this week and move on to the next topic. But would you encourage coaches to almost have quite a fluid syllabus and almost just look at what is happening to kind of let the behaviors of the player, let the environment dictate where you go with what you're teaching, you know, how
Yeah, I think there's a sweet spot in there. So what I recommend, and again, this is just my judgment, I'm not saying it's right and wrong, is the beginning of that phase, whatever it is, whether you split the season up into blocks, whatever it may be, is you prioritize the most important, the second, the third, the fourth. Remember, we cannot put technical and tactical as number one on that list, because number one on the list must be an element of a behavior. It may be scanning. It may be if I can get my players to be present in the moment and scan, looking for opportunities, threats live continually, that's going to help them see the game better, game management, and give them confidence to make better choices. So now we get into, if they can't scan well, I can give them all the tactics in the world. I can give them all the technique in the world. But if they're not scanning, they won't know what to choose in the moment. So their game management will be flawed, even in a simple of a young kid. So it may be that. It may be I'm going to help them be the best they can be. What does that look like to them? So just being present, managing their state. It may be I can get everyone to commit to a choice without fear. It may be I'm going to help them make sure every player helps every other player be the best they can be. What does that look like to me? Support them and their heads down, look at them, help with their behaviors. And then further down that list, you will have some tech, clearly. Bam, bam, bang. But here's the principle. Once you've nailed that list, you never compromise number one for two. You never compromise two for three. So what you'll find is then, using a lot of the skills, the need-centered skills, the covert recall and the other stuff, and plus more. But even the stuff we've discussed, what you'll find is use the principle of we are where we are. So you need to establish that first, and we're ready when we're ready. So that takes the pressure off, go, look, we've got to cover this. Now you can predict based on your experience and judgment. Well, I think for 3 months, we'll get through this stuff, but we may not. That's fine. So what will happen is when you start doing the covert recalls, you may have plan a session, which is fine to plan. You do the covert recall and you realize, well, they've recalled absolutely nothing from the previous session. Well, that's my fault as a coach. It's definitely not their fault. So now you can't do what you planned. It would be wrong to do what you planned because they're not ready. Based on a principle, we are where we are. We're ready when we're ready. So what we do is we deal with that we didn't connect with in the last session to fix it. And you now need to reanalyze, well, what do I need to do differently? Because it definitely was my fault. So then that is your main subject of that session. Then you move on. So you may have to do that for 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, maybe the whole session. If it's 20 minutes, then you can start the next phase. But then covert recall next session has to connect back with what you didn't connect with the previous session. All of a sudden now you're getting some real measures that are giving you confidence to know what the content is, so long as you've made your priority list. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you're a coach and you've only got an hour or an hour and a half a week with your plays, you've got so much that you can do in that time. And that ability to connect in a subtle way, I think is key. A subtle way that you've worked on previously, I think is invaluable. And you're just gradually building and layering up the learning over a period of time. And I suppose sometimes coaches can get drawn into a knee-jerk reaction of, oh, the team didn't keep possession well at the weekend, so we need to focus on possession this week, and it being ad hoc. So and that's probably something I've taken away from this, Mark, is just around the, you know, it doesn't have to be a complex plan, but just having a real clear idea of around, this is our objective. These are the things that are going to sort of facilitate that over the course of the year. And these are the times when I'm going to be reviewing that work as we move forwards. Mark, I suppose for anyone that's tuning in that wants to get some more information, where can they contact you, or is there anything that they can do in terms of looking out for more stuff? I know you mentioned some podcasts and videos earlier. Have you got a website that the guys can tune in on?
Yeah, so the website's PDS Coach, so Pavar Delta Sierra Coach. My Twitter's PDS Coach. I've got Instagram as well, but I don't know how to use that yet. I can't get my head around it. But most of my stuff will be on Twitter. But the website, all the free podcasts, there's a link to the free YouTube channel that's got demonstration videos in real time of examples. Sometimes me, sometimes a client's using this in many sports, including football. But also I'm just setting up at the moment an online need-centered fundamentals course, which I'm aiming to get done this year. I just want to nail it right. And that will give every coach the take a journey on, so they can understand stuff that they can actually use and apply. Once you sign up for it, you're on it for a year. So you can keep going back, keep reflecting. So they're pretty much for grassroots that don't have a big budget or no budget. At least there's some real support there. And I think where the podcasts come in really well is each time we have a conversation, we talk a little bit about elements. So sometimes I've been on the same podcast 3-4 times and we've delved into a little deeper about some key elements, but it's all based on the fundamentals of performance as a behavior, not an outcome. If we drive the very behaviors at self to influence the players, then drive the behaviors in the players that we want to help them grow, then actually the tactical becomes very easy.
Fantastic. And yeah, I think for anyone that's listening, we'd certainly encourage you to get in touch with us or to in touch with Mark if you take on board any of his strategies that he's recommended to you, and, you know, share that with us. It'd be fantastic to hear more of coaches and, you know, how they're applying the, you know, even if it's the sheep, the assassin and the ninja, and how they've used that, or the hot reviews you mentioned, you know, lots of different things. And I know, Mark, there's lots to cover in there, in, you know, you can go into a lot of detail. So we'd really encourage anyone that's listening to follow up. But yeah, on behalf of Football DNA, you know, real pleasure speaking with you, Mark, and you know, thank you ever so much for your time, and really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ross. Pleasure.
Hello everyone, it's Stuart here from Football DNA. Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and gained some knowledge. Make sure you check out our website, www.footballdna.co.uk, for all your coaching or player development needs. We have over 800 videos on the site covering every section of the game. We have outfield and goalkeeping content from professional coaches on video, along with sports science and nutrition videos for players to become better off the pitch. The ultimate platform for coach and player development. Take care and all the best. Stuart.